Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media. This is a, one, it's a bonus episode, and two, we're going a little bit off the board, because this is somebody who I think is just fantastic. It's Conrad Thompson, and he is the host of two podcasts that are consistently now in the top 15 of iTunes and sports, and they are wrestling-related, and they are just phenomenal. And I'm not throwing that word around lightly, phenomenal to listen to. The first one, and his original one, is Something to Wrestle With, and that is with Bruce Prichard, who is played Brother Love in the WWE, but a longtime right-hand man to Vince McMahon. And what these guys do is they take a singular thing that happened in wrestling and spend 2.5 hours giving you behind the scenes and stories and insight that you have never heard, whether it's sort of the last, the NWO coming into WCW or the behind the scenes of WrestleMania 6. It's just fascinating if you are a wrestling fan. And Conrad is now hosting a second podcast with Tony Schiavone, the famous voice of WCW and Jim Crockett Promotions. And that is called What Happened When. And that will look at like the beginning of Goldberg and how he started starring. The first episode of WCW Monday Nitro. Again, same premise. They take a singular thing that happened in wrestling, could even be one night, and they spend 2+ hours just giving you everything that happened, as well as the context and the backstory, and it's absolutely fantastic. Conrad Thompson is in Huntsville, Alabama, kind enough to join us on this podcast. So it's going to be a little podcast on podcast. Conrad Thompson, host of Something to Wrestle With, as well as What Happened When. All right, and as promised, we bring in Conrad Thompson, who is live in Huntsville, Alabama for us, and is the host of just two what I think are extraordinarily fantastic podcasts at the moment. And I'm, we'll get into how we started, but having jumped on board this podcast a couple months ago, it is fantastic. And for wrestling fans, it's beyond a must listen. And that's Something to Wrestle With, obviously. And Conrad's latest podcast that he's doing with Tony Schiavone, What Happened When. And we bring on Conrad Thompson of the MLW Radio Network. Conrad, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, you got it. That was a pretty shitty intro by me, Conrad. But
unlike
in your... As I heard an interview with you last night where you talked about that if you and Bruce Prichard do not have a good show, you will retape the show again, which I really have great respect for. That doesn't happen on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. If it's shitty, we just go straight from the top. So here's what's interesting to me is, and again, there'll be some people listening to this who are not wrestling fans, one, two, and would not be interested per se in the content, but they would be interested in how you put this together. So you own a mortgage company in Alabama, and that is your full-time job. That's where you're talking to us today. But over the course of the last year, you have become known in podcast circles as one of the sort of go-to hosts for wrestling podcasts. And in particular, the podcast that you do with Bruce is, I feel, revolutionary in that you take a singular thing that happened in wrestling and you go long form. You spend 2 hours, 2.5 hours sort of dissecting why this happened. So if you can go as long as you want, take us back from the beginning, how someone in the mortgage company business becomes a podcaster.
Totally by accident. I got in the mortgage business back in 2001, and then we started advertising my mortgage company on the air, both radio and television, in 2009. And part of that included me doing what they call live spots in morning drive radio and afternoon drive radio. So I would just be on with the jocks, and at first it was just me talking about mortgages, and then eventually they started to feel more comfortable with me and my ability to kind of make it not just boring mortgage talk. So we would talk about real life. We'd talk about the football games over the weekend or something silly that was in the news, and I became kind of the third voice on the show for these morning drive and afternoon drive radio shows. And somewhere in 2013, I befriended Dave Milliken, the former beltmaker for the World Wrestling Federation and UFC and TNA, and he introduced me to a fellow in Memphis named Mark James, who was working on books with Jim Cornette. And so Jim Cornette, who was an old school wrestling manager, introduced me to J.J. Dillon, who used to be kind of Dusty Rhodes' booker when he was booking the Mid-Atlantic Wrestling promotion. And he also worked in the office for the World Wrestling Federation of Vince McMahon in the 90s. And then eventually, I guess, finished his career, so to speak, with WCW, working for Eric Bischoff. And so through JJ, I met another, and I met another, and another, and eventually I meet Ric Flair. And Ric and I had mutual friends, so I had a little bit of an in, and I was, of course, as a wrestling fan, a huge Ric Flair fan. So obviously, you know, it's a big deal to meet Ric Flair, and one thing leads to another, and we become pretty good buddies. And this happens at a time where, you know, Ric had just lost his youngest son, Reed, and he had moved from Charlotte, North Carolina, down to Atlanta, Georgia. That's where his girlfriend, Wendy, who is the former Fifi the French Maid from WCW, was living at the time, and she had small children. So because of that, she couldn't relocate to North Carolina, so he relocated to Atlanta. Well, he found himself in Atlanta with not a lot of friends. Most of his friends are still in Charlotte. So with the exception of Brad Nessler, who lives in the market, I was his nearest new friend. So we would, you know, meet for drinks and watch football, and he'd come to my birthday party, and I'd go to his, and then we did holidays together, and we just hit it off. And he eventually gets an offer to do a podcast from CBS Radio. They were starting their Play.it platform, and he was kind of uncomfortable with the idea of just talking to a microphone. And that's pretty ironic when you consider that it's Ric Flair, who has a reputation for being one of the best interviews of all time. But nonetheless, he wanted someone to kind of talk to and bounce ideas off of. And he asked me to sit in on his first episode just as a fan and ask fan questions and have fan interaction. And I said yes. So I sat in with him. He dug it. CBS dug it. He kept asking me to come back. Eventually, through our friendship, I was introduced to Bruce Pritchard. We hit it off in a big way, had an opportunity to work together in our real life. And one day, we're sitting on the couch, just hanging out, watching whatever. And I had a wild hair, and I said, "Hey, man, what happened when?" And I asked a story, or asked a question, and he would just spout off the story. And the thing that kind of motivated me to push him to do a podcast was when we talked about the mass exodus from WCW to the WWF that happened when the Radicals moved, which was Perry Saturn and Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit and all those guys. And so when that happened, he told me a fascinating story, and I was not that interested in the story, or so I didn't think. But when he got going, I realized, man, this is gold. This is what wrestling fans really want to hear. They don't want to hear two old guys, you know, being super nice to each other and being, you know, kind of bitter about maybe the way the business is today. And, oh, it's not like it used to be. They don't want to hear that. There's plenty of that out there. This is something different, and if I was, you know, trying to scroll through my podcast choices, this is what I would gravitate to. You should do it. And he protested for a few weeks, and eventually I wore him down. And he said he would do it, but only if I agreed to participate. So I did, and we got set up with MLW Radio, and everyone's most, you know, obscene expectation was that we would do 20 or 30,000 downloads a month, and it grew a lot bigger than that. So knock on wood, it's been fun, and now here we are with a pretty fun podcast.
All right, there's a lot to sort of unpack there, and I appreciate you giving the audience sort of a setup of where that is. First off, Conrad, does it still feel a little surreal to you, because it must, that you did not go into this profession to be a podcaster? Again, you're a businessman, yet you are now hosting a podcast that is a top 20, a regular top 20 or top 10 podcast in iTunes, with the likes of major places like ESPN, Fox Sports, Barstool Sports, etc. We're talking multi-million dollar companies.
Yeah, no, it wasn't my intention at all. It is very much a passion project. I enjoy it. It's fun. You know, some of my buddies like to deer hunt or bass fish. I do wrestling podcasts, so to each his own, I guess. So, right. No, it's fun, and it's a creative outlet. And I get to, you know, participate and do and talk about something that I enjoy. So it's not anything I ever imagined I would make money from. So that is a pleasant surprise, to say the least.
roughly what kind of downloads are you getting for the podcast right now in terms of either weekly or monthly numbers?
In the last 30 days on Bruce Pritchard's show, Something to Wrestle With, Bruce Pritchard, we did just over 2.2 million. And on the last 7 days, we're probably near the 700,000 range. But we had a bonus episode in there. But routinely, it's somewhere between 550 and 600,000 per week.
My God, that is unbelievable. And I will let the audience know that when you hear this, it'll sound seamless. But we've disconnected with Conrad twice. And if Vince McMahon was like running this production, he'd be Conrad, would he not be cursing up a storm at this point saying, like, what the fuck are you people doing? Or something to that effect.
I'm sure it would be. God damn it, pal. Give me a phone that fucking works.
Have you gotten, because Bruce Pritchard is so good with impressions, have you sort of been able to up your own impression game, whether it's Vince or whether it's, the most famous ones are obviously stuff like the Macho Man and stuff. But Bruce can almost do anybody. The only one, having listened to the show, that I didn't think he was dead on was Piper, but almost every other impression he's done has been, to me, spot on.
Yeah, he puts everyone to shame. You know, I have done wrestling impressions in the past, but now that I have been exposed to Bruce, I won't try that again. It's just embarrassing myself at this point. So I'm going to leave the impressions to him, unless we're doing a skit where I just have to space my words out and we pretend it sounds like Jerry Briscoe.
Yeah, one of the things I like actually on your podcast is when you sort of do intentional silence just to sort of shame Bruce when he's bullshitting you in an answer. That's something I enjoy.
I appreciate you saying that, because I get a lot of tweets saying that our show is underproduced because of the pauses and long silence. And it's like, dude, you don't understand.
Right. Yeah.
Has Howard Stern taught us nothing?
Correct.
Come on.
Yeah, you're pausing intentionally so that he continues, or at least the audience sort of hears him trying to bullshit his way out of it. So I appreciate that. Don't change that.
I call it sitting in your stinky. Sitting in your stinky, Bruce.
Perfect explanation. So here's something that is interesting to me. And again, this is a media podcast, so there's a lot of, we talk to a lot of writers and broadcasters about process. And you are not a trained journalist at all. But what I find really phenomenal about your podcast is that you approach the questions for both Bruce and Tony Schiavone very journalistically. So, and obviously what is behind all this is preparation. Can you, as detailed for the audience as you can, take us through the process of how you prepare for each show? Because the amount of preparation for this stuff to me is just phenomenal. You know, if you're doing the Montreal Screwjob, or, you know, you're doing, I'm just making this up, WrestleMania like 16, you know, these, I am sure of this, you were doing hours of preparation to ask these detailed questions. So take us through the process of how you get to the point where you are able to sort of have enough questions for a two-hour show.
Well, just last night, I did 5 hours of research for WrestleMania 6, which is going to air as our next episode. And through that process, I found myself firing up the WWE Network and putting the actual program on another monitor in my office so it could just kind of be playing in the background. Anything that I find interesting or catches my eye, I'll make note of. But I'm not paying super close attention to the actual program itself. In the meantime, I'm doing research. And one of the things I would do is I would first take a look at the match listing, see who all was on there, and then I'll try to see who has written a book or a biography or a memoir of some sort about their time in the business. And then I'll make sure I have that on my phone, and I'll purchase it if necessary, and then just use the search function to find any reference for whatever the topic was. So last night, you know, we were talking about WrestleMania 6. I looked up all the performers who were on there, realized who had books, who didn't, and then just quickly used the search function on my tablet to kind of scroll through and see if there's anything of note or interesting in there. And then I kind of lay it out in my format. And so the format of the show is essentially, you know, what got us to this point. Well, normally, as you mentioned earlier, we're talking about a specific moment in time. So we'll spend a significant amount of time just kind of setting the stage, as I like to say. How did we get to WrestleMania 6? What led to the decision to hold it in this venue? Who would have been involved in booking that venue? What, from a production standpoint, does that venue present as a challenge? How did you promote it locally to push tickets? Did you have any strategic partnerships in the market? And then if you run across anything in your research, where guys were doing appearances for this or that, then you kind of zero in on those and just ask questions about how that came about. Sometimes there's nothing of note there. Other times, there is some really good insight there, which I found to be the case in the 1997 Royal Rumble episode. But once we have kind of the business aspect covered and I can check that off, then we'll go ahead and we'll start talking about the storyline presentation and what happened on television and the house shows, which would be the shows that weren't televised, that led to these confrontations on the big stage. And once we kind of understand what happened in storyline, then we start to examine what was going on behind the scenes, whose contract was coming near, whose wife was pregnant, who had just gotten in trouble for staying out and drinking too late, et cetera, et cetera. And the biggest crutch I use through all of my research is the Wrestling Observer newsletter.
Right.
His website, WrestlingObserver.com, Dave Meltzer, I mean, is a resource for all wrestling fans. If you ever want to learn about the business, I can't think of a better place to go. He's got lots and lots of stuff archived there. Unfortunately, I didn't have the opportunity to use that for WrestleMania 6 because he does not have 1990 available online. But I do have a Pro Wrestling Torch subscription, which I guess you would call the second biggest trade publication in the professional wrestling business. So I just go through all of the Torch issues that are still posted online from 1990. I am a member there at that website as well. And I just try to use the search function again to find any reference to the show itself, the performers who took place or who took part on the show, what have you. And then I just kind of quickly jot all of those notes down. So now at this point, I have, you know, business notes. I have the actual results from the pay-per-view. I've got the pay-per-view playing in the background that I can just take notes of. And I've got at least one serious third-party reference from a insider trade publication. And once I kind of compile all the notes, I try to just go through it chronologically. When the building was first announced, all the way through at the end when the buy rates come out and what programs the guys were with afterwards and who quickly went to a rival company or made a jump or whatever it may be.
That's really interesting. And Meltzer's been a guest on this podcast and will again prior to the upcoming WrestleMania. But what the sort of, to me, Conrad, the thread line through all this is Bruce Prichard. And you happen to have a guy who was a right-hand person for Vince McMahon, one, and two, and this is the important thing, I think, his memory of certain things is really, really spot on. Like listening to the Million Dollar Man episode, which was unbelievable, to learn about the vignettes that they filmed and where they filmed it and how they might have been using like a shitty pool or something like that is unbelievable to me. So how much of this... let me take that back. Obviously, the podcast works because Bruce's was there. But do you discuss with him prior to the podcast to help jog his memory? Because if you were doing this organically or cold, I think it would be hard for anybody just to remember that kind of detail from, you know, 25, 27, 19 years ago.
No, if I had more time, and part of the flaw in our show, if there is one, is that I don't give us enough time between the poll finishing, because one of the things we do that's kind of unique to our show is we mention what is going to be our potential topic list for the next episode, and we kind of tease that at the end of each show. And then the following Monday, we put a poll up on our Twitter, and we let our fans and listeners vote as to what they want to hear. And we actually have that posted Friday by noon. So we turn it very, very quickly. Voting doesn't end until early Tuesday morning. So I have Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday to research this and record it and get it going. Well, real life gets in the way sometimes, so I can't just drop everything and do all of my show prep and be ready on Tuesday. So last night I finished my notes for WrestleMania 6 at around 9:30. We were taping by 9:35.
Wow.
So when I have those notes, what I'll do is I will share them in Google Drive and share them with Bruce so he kind of has an idea of where I'm going. And sometimes as I'm doing my thing or he's doing his thing, we will skip around and make notes to each other because we're not always taping it together. Last night he was in Houston and I was in Huntsville. If we're together that week for whatever reason, for work or what have you, then I would certainly say, oh, I didn't know this, and just in passing casually mention something that I found interesting. But most of the time I'm just hitting him with that blindly or He's got maybe a few minutes heads up, but that's it. Wow. No significant advanced planning at all. But he knows ahead of time, you know, on Tuesday morning, he knows what topic we're going to be covering. So I'm sure he does a little bit of memory jogging and research himself just to kind of prepare himself for what I might hit him with.
When you are together, where are you taping it? And then when you are apart, where are you taping this?
I have a little home studio. The house I'm in actually came with like a built-in office, and I never used that. I used another room as my office. So I just had that kind of set up as like a computer station for my kid. She outgrew it. She never used the room. So I converted it and put a lot of wrestling memorabilia in there and put some rugs down for sound, put some soundproofing on the walls, and threw a couch in there, a couple of chairs, and then my actual recording equipment, which is pretty simple, just an all-in-one computer. We use Skype when he's at long distance. We've got a board. We've got a couple of mic processors. We've got an amplifier. We've got a phone box solution like a radio station would have if someone can't or doesn't want to use Skype and just wants to use a traditional phone line for whatever reason. And that's really it. You know, we press record and get going.
Wow.
But I've got that in my house just right off my garage.
Do you produce it or do you send it to somebody or somebodies to produce the podcast to sort of do the intros, the outros, et cetera?
All of the editing I do myself, with the exception of putting music beds underneath. I'm not involved in any of the music selection whatsoever because that's just not my area of expertise. MLW handles that. I do, you know, have an idea of what they might play as music beds, but the actual editing together, the when the show starts, when it stops, how long it is, are there breaths left in there, is there a censor somewhere, do we leave bleeps in? You know, if we need to recut something because somebody flubbed the line, you know, I do all of that editing. But for the most part, it's just live to tape. We just press record and go.
Wow. And the MLW network consists of what?
It's the MLW Radio Network. It's MLWRadio.com. And there is a whole host of shows there. Ric Flair is going to be bringing back his podcast with former ESPN analyst now, MLB analyst Richard Flores. Eric Bischoff has a show there called Bischoff on Wrestling.
Yep.
Kevin Sullivan, who was a famous booker in the Florida territory and then later for World Championship Wrestling, does a show with MSL. Jim Cornette, who is one of wrestling's most unique personalities and has been everywhere and arguably one of the top three managers of all time, he has a podcast there. On and on and on. It really is where the big boys podcast, so to speak, including Tony Schiavone and Bruce Pritchard.
Yeah, Robert Flores, I think, is the guy who's going to work with Flair if it's the same guy we're talking about from MLB Network. And so the MLW really has, there are other podcasts, but they, other wrestling podcasts, I should say, but they have made their bones, Conrad, in terms of getting a number of these podcasts with wrestling people that we will have known from the past, correct? Flair, Cornette, etc.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And MLW stands for Major League Wrestling. So the concept is it's Major League Wrestling Radio. And the first sort of big name that they got was Jim Cornette. And then they were able to go ahead and snag Kevin Sullivan. And they've had some guys who may not be the brand name, but certainly had the experience working with WWE and Alex Greenfield and Court Bauer.
Yep.
But then more recently, you know, they got Ric Flair and then Eric Bischoff and then Bruce Pritchard, now Tony Schiavone. So the network continues to grow, and there's really something for everybody. Whether you're into the more regional promotions or you are just a fan of the big WWF, WCW stuff, you've got that too.
Yeah, and Bischoff, obviously, not only does he give you obviously his WCW experience and a little bit of his WWE experience, but he's a in-road to Hulk Hogan, who has appeared on that show many times. So that's, you know, they've done obviously a fantastic job in terms of bringing these podcasts to the public. You mentioned Dave Meltzer before, and this is always interesting to me when you and Bruce go back and forth with a Meltzer item, because it's very clear sort of how Bruce feels about Meltzer. But what's not always clear, Conrad, and I think I give you a lot of credit for this, is as a listener, I'm not always sure where you feel about Meltzer. You know, I would say, and I'm probably biased just given what I do, but I don't think there's been a more journalistically sound person who has covered the business for as long as he has. And he, if he did not exist, it's almost inconceivable to me what we might not know about pro wrestling. How do you, given you rely on so much of his work, how do you feel about sort of Meltzer as a as an editorial person over the last 25, 30 years?
I think his contribution to the business is huge, and I know there's a lot of wrestling insiders who disagree and don't really like it, but he has kept me a fan when at times I might not have been. I wouldn't be watching the product on television, but I was still reading his work. I've been a subscriber to his newsletter since 1997, so I'm a big fan, and I do feel like he's right a lot. However, I do know that in the end of the day, everything is sales. And because I'm in sales, I just kind of view everything through that lens. So I realize a lot of the times when he's, you know, he has opinions one way or another, or he has comments one way or another, some of that is him being a good businessman. He doesn't work for someone else, and he's paid the same whether or not he sells a lot of subscriptions or not. He makes more money when he sells more subscriptions. So why wouldn't you, whenever possible, try to take an opportunity to make more money for yourself? So I do feel like there has been a tendency over the years for there to be an opportunity for him to be, you know, just completely objective, or for him to slant one way or another, and he would slant the way that made him more money. And I don't think that makes him a bad person. I think that makes him a great businessman. I totally get it. I don't discount his work at all. I think there's no one like him. There will never be anyone like him. There's lots of people who compete in that space, but no one can hold a candle to him. He is the gold standard for that information.
Conrad, as someone who you know, does the podcast that you do, and you are clearly a devout wrestling fan, and I think one of the you know, one of the authorities now, I would say, sort of in the business, at least historically, when you are looking at the current mainstream coverage of pro wrestling, and a lot of that is obviously ESPN at the moment, who's dedicated part of their website to coverage, and obviously SportsCenter and other places are doing more. What is your impression of how the sport is covered? Forget about how people feel about it on Twitter and stuff, but do you feel like the fans are getting an accurate reflection if they're reading stuff at ESPN or reading things in Meltzer's newsletter, et cetera?
No, I don't. I feel like most wrestling fans who read stuff online tend to think that business is down. Well, if you actually pay attention, you'll see that their revenue is higher than ever. Now, no, net profit may not be, but in the end, that is not an net profit is not always the best indicator of interest and appetite for a product. The top line of the revenue is, and their top line revenue is the best it's ever been. But you wouldn't necessarily believe that if you talk to a wrestling fan. And you might not believe that if you talk to someone just in your regular everyday life, because it doesn't seem that it's as big as it was in the late 90s or in the mid 80s. But revenue wise, it is. So I don't know that we really get the sense that it's as popular as maybe it once was from the mainstream. And I do still think it's more of a wink and a nod, but we get so much more coverage in the mainstream, whether it's the Today Show or the New York Post or Sports Illustrated in 2017 than we ever did in 2007. So they've got to be doing something right.
How much do you think the Raw ratings are a reflection of popularity? Like if you know, these Raw ratings come out every week and, you know, first hour may do 3 million, 2 million. Same thing with SmackDown. Do you view that as an indicator on the health of the of wrestling, or is it just one indicator now as part of a larger group of things to indicate how popular this is?
It's always just been one part. The only reason it became paramount and was really the forefront of everybody's mind is because there was direct head-to-head competition. There's not direct head-to-head competition anymore. Now, at this point, you know, all Vince McMahon is in there competing with is a personal best. And the way any businessman is going to, you know, judge his performance is the bottom line. And that does include net profit. I mean, that's what we're talking about. But ratings are just one piece. You know, he's going to consider the licensing revenue. He's going to consider merchandise. He's going to consider live event sales. He's going to consider the network. He's got all these other opportunities that are income streams. The ratings are just one indicator. And ratings in and of themselves don't necessarily work that well as an income predictor because it's just one piece. In his case, he has a guarantee that he's being paid for his television rights. So how much money he's making on television is kind of set in stone. There may be opportunities for him to sell a few more advertisements here or there, and that may be good for the television station. But there, ultimately, the network is the one who's going to benefit more from that than Vince. Now, of course, that could change. If ratings bottom out, he won't get the same rights fee the next go-around. So he wants the rating to stay strong. But it's not the end-all, be-all. He's got all these other pieces. But I think so many wrestling fans who grew up as Monday Night Wars fans see the rating now and say, oh, well, that's not where it was. The business must be down. That's not the way people run it. You know, I run a business, and at the end of the day, what's in your bank account is what you're running it on, not based on, you know, how many likes we got on Facebook. Sure, likes on Facebook matter. We'd like to have some more. But getting a bunch of likes does not always equate getting a bunch of money. And Vince McMahon is in the business to make money.
Was it your decision, or were you responsible for bringing Tony Schiavone in to start the What Happened When podcast?
Yes.
Okay. Did you sort of determine in your mind that there was a void in terms of the podcast medium where WCW was not being talked about, and most of these podcasts were WWE-centric, either current WWE or post or previous WWE/WWF?
My concept was simple. Hey, we have a formula that works. The old tired format of having a guest on and trying to get 52 guests a year and make it interesting and have people essentially, you know, look at the title and say, oh, I like that guy or I don't, and that be all the consideration they give to whether or not they're going to download it, that didn't work for me. I wanted to give people something that they wanted, and so how better to do that than to just ask them? So we started suggesting topics, then we put up a poll, and whatever one we would cover. And we would cover it in great detail. I felt like that guaranteed us a formula that would give us a show that people wanted to hear. How could I be so sure? Well, we asked them. So once we had this format down and it started to catch fire, I thought, hey, you know what? This is just one of the territories. So, you know, the goal is to develop a little bit of a network with this exact same formula for all the major territories, whether it's Crockett or it's WCW or it's ECW or it's TNA or it's Dallas or it's Florida or it's Memphis. And we've got, you know, conversations going. Unfortunately, I can't do seven shows a week. I have a real life. I have a mortgage company to run. But I can find other like-minded fans who would enjoy this. But I don't want to just do it to do it. I want to do it and it be good. Now, I don't think any of them will have the appeal that Bruce's does, because Bruce has an unparalleled history in the business. You know, Bruce was in a unique position where for a long time, you know, that inner circle was Vince McMahon, Pat Patterson, and Bruce Pritchard.
Right.
So if Bruce Pritchard makes a statement, who can challenge him? No one. Pat's not saying anything. Vince isn't saying anything. So if Bruce Pritchard wants to go on the air and say Vince McMahon likes to wear high heels and ladies' underwear, no one can dispute it, because Bruce would have unparalleled access. And I felt like we needed somebody like that in every promotion. And for whatever reason, a lot of people combine Jim Crockett Promotions and World Championship Wrestling and kind of mesh them together as one, and they don't really view that break of when Turner took over as it being or feeling or being managed differently. Well, there was one guy who was there for most of that, and that was Tony Schiavone. He was there from 1983 all the way until March of 2001. So when I looked at the tenure that Bruce Pritchard had with Vince, I wanted to find someone who had a similar tenure, who could talk about the 80s, who could talk about the early and mid-90s, who could talk about the boom period of the late 90s, and then who could talk about the demise in the early 2000s. And, you know, there were guys who were there for different parts of that. You know, a Kevin Sullivan was there for parts of that, and Eric Bischoff was there for parts of that, a Vince Russo was there for parts of that. Tony Schiavone was kind of there for all of it, you know, with the exception of the 1 year with Vince. He was my answer to Bruce Pritchard. He didn't have the inside access to the right-hand man of the man the entire time, because that just didn't exist.
Right.
Because there was so much turnover at the top of WCW, whether it was, you know, Kip Fryer or Jim Herr or whoever, it wasn't always one guy. And that was always what, you know, Vince was for the WWF. So the show will be somewhat different there, but we're trying to just make the exact same format work for fans who want to hear about the NWO, who want to hear about the Steiner brothers, who want to hear about Sting. And why not go ahead and ask someone who was there for the entire time?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I have a couple questions about the Schiavone show. And this were some of the people also, when I put out that I was going to interview you, they were interested in this as well. And my God, does Schiavone love Deborah McMichael? Dear Lord, there's a reference in almost every podcast. God bless the guy. So the interesting thing about Schiavone, and you sort of hit on this, is he's not Bruce. And the show is different. His access to the power was different in the WCW. And I wonder, have you gotten... If you take, how can I sort of phrase this? When I listened to the Goldberg show, I loved it. As an individual sort of show, it was just fascinating to listen to that. I've heard the other two shows and I liked them, and I'll continue to listen. But there is a very distinct difference between Tony and Bruce in terms of detail. And what I try to sort of trick myself in my mind is like, don't compare the two, because you can't compare anybody to Bruce in this situation and just judge the Tony show on that show itself. But have you found your audience, because I guarantee there are a lot of people who listen to both, have you gotten different feedback for the Schiavone show than you have for the Pritchard show, because of the reasons I'm saying, because the Tony can't go sometimes to the detail place that Bruce can go?
Okay, now let's erase Bruce from the equation. What other podcast can?
I mean, there's not many other podcasts that have your formula, where you are taking what I would consider sort of historical things and looking back in depth. Most of these podcasts do not have a person who was part of the inner circle to do that. It'd be like if I was looking back at the Bush administration and I did a podcast with Dick Cheney. It's just that's the only way you could sort of similarly do that. So that's a long answer to you to say not many, if any.
Yeah, there are none. You know, the only other person who could do this with Bruce, you know, in the Bruce position and put forth a similar show is Pat Patterson.
Right.
He's not doing it. And there's no one like that in WCW. So I do get why people listen to both shows and then say, oh, well, Bruce's is better. Well, no one's arguing that, but there's a few reasons for that. Number one, there is no other Bruce Pritchard in the business.
Right.
And Bruce Pritchard in professional wrestling was persona non grata this time 1 year ago. It was something he used to do. He wasn't involved. He didn't care. He had a lot of heat. Nobody liked him. Everybody hated him. He was a super heel. He had a pro wrestling tee store and sold like 2 shirts a month. Now he sells 20, 30, 40 a day. And that popularity and that resurgence is from people getting to know who he really is and hear his real personality and not just, you know, what someone said about him in a shoot interview, because he was in the heat position for a long time with the WWF, and there are no parallels to that. You know, ECW didn't have the longevity. WCW had so much turnover at the top. No one had that level of access for that length than Bruce Pritchard. And you couple that with the fact that Bruce and I are now very, very good friends and are very familiar with each other, and it creates a chemistry and a knowledge base that I just don't think you can compare. So I appreciate you saying you should just kind of take the Tony show for what it is and don't try to compare the two. But I get why people would, A, because it's the same format, and B, because I'm on there. So because I'm involved and because it's the same format, I get why people think it ought to be Bruce's show, but it's never going to be.
Conrad, eliminating Vince, obviously, from this equation, because he never would do something like this. The one person to me that stands out, that if you could take somebody from the current roster and do the same concept, I'm not talking about an in-ring performer at the moment, it would be Paul Heyman, who has an incredible, who's been a guest on this podcast too, and I think is one of the great promo people of all time. But given his history with ECW, given that he worked with a lot of the guys, and then there were times where he was part of the inner circle with Vince, I feel like if he ever decided to do something like this, that would be a can't-miss podcast. One, do you agree with that? Two, if it's not Heyman, is there somebody that you see currently in the wrestling landscape who, in a couple of years, could be another person to add to the kind of the Bruce Pritchard, Tony Schiavone roster at the moment?
Well, you know, that's a tough answer to say, you know, who could do it. To me, you know, anybody who's on the writing team right now, could do it. I think one of the best podcasts possible that probably will never happen would be Michael P.S. Hayes, because he has all the experience of being in the territories, whether it was Florida or Dallas or Tennessee or Georgia. And, of course, he was with WCW, Jim Crockett. He even had a quick stint with the WWF. But now he's been there for more than 20 years and kind of the right-hand man of Vince McMahon. So I think if or when Michael Hayes, well, let's just say it, he's never doing a podcast, but if he did, it would be phenomenal. But outside of that, no, I think Paul Heyman is entertaining enough on his own to carry one of, if not the greatest wrestling podcast ever. I just don't think we'll see it happen because he has always kind of had this stance of, hey, I don't want to look back. I just want to look forward.
Right.
And the podcasts are looking back. And he would have a unique opportunity because he was around as a photographer in New York and then later for Crockett and then cut his teeth in Continental and bounced around all the different territories. Of course, he worked with the NWA and WCW and then started ECW and had the lawsuit with WCW and then, of course, went to the WWF. And he hasn't always been the most well-liked guy there, and he's been misunderstood a lot, and a lot of people have strong opinions. But to me, he's one of the greatest minds in the business and clearly one of my favorite personalities. I'm one of the biggest ECW fans of all time.
Yeah, Heyman is fantastic. This is a question that everybody's going to want answered who is interested in listening to my podcast with you as a guest, and that is, what has the reaction been from the WWE, both to the podcast itself, the podcast concept, and I think in particular Bruce Pritchard giving revelations about what is happening behind the scenes? Because again, the reason why your podcast I think is just so phenomenal is that we are just given, we those of us who have watched this for a long time or watched it even recently, we're just given privy into stuff we never get to know. That part of the genius of the WWE is that we never get to know. The hidden secrets are in that writing room. So I just preambled myself way too long here, Connor. It was a shitty question, but I'm gonna solve it and fix it by asking you, what have you heard? What has the reaction been from the WWE?
Whenever I go to the shows with Rick and I have an opportunity to kind of hang out with him before the show in the back or whatever, the guys are all about it. So many of the guys who are on the road and making towns in 2017 love the podcast. We've got a lot of loyal WWE listeners who are on the road for them. We do have some who are in the office, writing staff who don't want me to say their name, production people who work in the office. There are lots of office staffers who I know are also digging it. As far as the executives, I don't know that they're as fond of it. I got a few calls about a couple of shows that maybe everybody didn't love, and it caused a little bit of a stir and maybe touched a nerve or two. And that was a lesson learned from us. But in the end, the show is the show. But I would hate to see it get derailed in a way where we touched on things or covered things that made it to where it was uncomfortable for anyone to cross paths, so to speak. I mean, we don't want to burn a bridge for he or I, because I do have friends that work there. I am very close with Rick, and obviously his daughter is a 912-time world champion there now. So I don't want to upset the apple cart, but at the same time, you know, we're just going to tell the doggone truth. And if somebody's upset that we told the truth, then it kind of is what it is.
Have you heard, I feel like I read this somewhere, that when Piper was doing his podcast, the WWE did not want current people to go on his show for some reason. Have you heard that they will sort of prevent access for certain podcasts if they don't like what they're hearing? Although, the interesting is that really is not a factor for you, because the podcast is you and Bruce. You don't need to have John Cena or Dean Ambrose come on. But I feel like I had read that, or maybe I heard that in listening to the Piper show, that sometimes they can be a little tough in terms of providing access if they don't like what they're hearing on a show.
No, that totally makes logical sense. That's something they would do, but I do feel like it's worth mentioning, and I don't mean this to disparage the dead, but Piper was working an angle with that. You know, Piper also said that Austin got him kicked off podcast one. That's not true. I've had in-depth conversations off air with Austin about that, of exactly what happened, why it happened, how it happened. No one has ever said that Austin is a bullshitter and wouldn't just be honest and tell the truth. I don't see that as being the case.
Right.
Rick and I never had any trouble getting guests for the show. We could get anybody we wanted at any time. And that's not a really complicated process to do if you know who to ask. And the person to ask is Mark Carano. So if someone was having trouble getting someone, they just weren't asking the right person. They weren't asking the person who could give you a yes. But the idea that the WWE would deny a legend like Roddy Piper the opportunity to talk to Titus O'Neil, I'm not buying that.
Interesting. Okay. And I will say, at least in terms of coming from a mainstream publication, which I do at Sports Illustrated, they've done nothing but provide access for us, although, you know, we're obviously providing something for them, and that's mainstream attention, which they want. So that's interesting. Do you, Conrad, have you at all, either via your sources or Bruce's sources, do you believe Vince McMahon has listened to this podcast?
No, I don't think he's listened, but I do know for sure that he's aware of it. I know for sure that every name that you've been taught that is at the top of that food chain there is aware of the podcast, several of which have listened and enjoy it. But I know he's aware for sure. But I can't imagine he's sitting around wanting to listen to, you know, me and Bruce, Brother Love and the Mortgage Guy talk about Zeus. That just doesn't seem like something Vince McMahon's up for.
God damn it, Conrad. All right, that's my one Vince imitation. That'll be the end. what do you see as the ceiling for these two podcasts at the moment? The numbers that you have are crazy. I mean, there's no way you could have imagined this many people would be listening it to start. But now that you know the base is there, I mean, what's the ceiling? Could the ceiling be 10 podcasts with 10 various people in these positions sort of doing these type of podcasts? I mean, how much further can you extend this kind of content?
Well, I think, you know, when you try to compare any follow-up show or spinoff show to the one that we have with Bruce, they're always going to pale in comparison. And that's not based on the host, and that's not based on me. It's just based on it's the WWF. The WWF is the biggest show,
right.
And it's always going to be the biggest show. So, you know, I do feel like there's an opportunity for us to grow and make it bigger. But some of those listeners are just going to be, you know, they're going to keep coming back to this fishing hole, so to speak, and they're going to pick up the other stuff. So maybe somebody who found our WWF show grew up in Georgia and they really want to hear Georgia Championship Wrestling, or they grew up in Dallas and they really want to hear about the Von Erichs. So that would be his two shows for the week. So I think we could get more downloads with that, but I don't know that it necessarily develops a whole lot of new listeners. It's kind of like when there's two radio stations in town, they have the same format. There's usually one that's the heritage station. It's been here for 40 years, and everybody knows about it and what it is and what channel it is, and it's the branded one. And then there's the upstart that's trying to make its own way, but everybody who listens to the new one knows about the old heritage station. But everybody who listens to the heritage station does not know about the new kid on the block. And
right.
I feel like that's what all spinoff shows will be for us. The Bruce Pritchard Show will always be the cornerstone.
How do you – you guys are now doing some live shows. I hear that when you're announcing that on the podcast. And one of the great things about a podcast is that there's an intimacy factor. You know, you can listen to it when you're working out or when you're running or at your home. But it's sort of – you know, you're choosing that relationship and where you want to have that relationship. A live show is totally different. It's a totally different, as you know, sort of experience and connection. Well – but you guys have made the decision to do that. What's the response been? And is the live show different thematically or formatically than the podcast?
That's a great question because we have no idea. I know that sounds hilarious to hear, but the reality is we were approached by a promoter who said, man, you guys are doing a bunch of downloads, and we have a building here and nothing going on here, and it's near the arena. We'd like to see if you guys would like to do your show here. So we thought, well, hell yeah, we'll do it. And then afterwards, maybe 2 days later, the conversation was, hey, what are we going to do? But just like with my meticulous preparation for the show, I've been working on it. So we have a real plan now and a real layout and format and an idea of what we're going to do. And this will be our first one, so I'm sure it's not going to be our best one. But we're going to, you know, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. We're going to break a few. And we announced this on the day after Thanksgiving, I believe, yeah, that's right. So we announced the live show the day after Thanksgiving, and we sold out on January 24th without a lot of promotion. So now that April 1st show sold out on January 24th, there's been lots of opportunities fall in our lap for other shows. So, the Royal Rumble's in Philadelphia. Philadelphia would like for us to do, or there are promoters in Philadelphia who'd like for us to do the show there. Same with Survivor Series in Houston and New Orleans for WrestleMania and so on and so forth. So we're going to take an opportunity to look at those, but first we'd kind of like to get this first one under our belt and make sure it's something we enjoy, and B, we think, we can do well with, not in terms of financially, but we don't just want to be another show. We want it to be the best show, the hottest show. We want it to sell out. We want people to clamor for it. We want people to, really, really want to see tape of it, even though we're not going to sell the tape of it. If we're creating that type of buzz for a live show, then we'll keep doing it. But if it's just lukewarm or mixed reviews, we're out.
I got one more before I get to some viewer questions or listener questions that we'll end on. But how lucrative can this be in terms of both the podcast, and you don't have to give numbers, nor do I expect you to, but in terms of both the two podcasts that you're doing and then doing live shows around the country and then selling T-shirts? I mean, does it ever get to the point where you could walk away from your mortgage business because this is a full-time gig, or for you, is this always sort of just something that you do on the side as a labor of love that just also happens to be getting you some money?
This is always just going to be a hobby for me. There is an opportunity for me to make a significant amount of money with it, but in the end, I don't know that I want to go, banking my long-term future on podcasting. If I would have done that with a different technology, if I would have done that for MySpace 10 years ago, where would I be now? I mean, we don't know that podcasting will even be a thing in 10 years. Right. So I want to maximize, our fun and our opportunity and our potential right now. But I understand going in that we have a shelf life, maybe even with this format, this technology, this could just be a moment in time. But to answer your question, advertising is sold based on what they call CPM. So how many thousands of people are listening? And if I tell, a potential advertiser, well, 2.2 million in the last 30 days, and here's proof, and here's where they live, and here's how they break up, geographically, and here's their demo. It's man versus woman. It's this many Androids. It's this many iPhones. Our system breaks all that down. So when I can tell somebody, hey, we had 122,000 listens in the last week in New York City Metro, all of a sudden people are interested. Mm-hmm. So it is lucrative enough to where it is a full-time living for two individuals if they wanted it to be, but it's just not something that I'm comfortable enough with long-term walking away from a 16-year mortgage career.
Gotcha. All right. I appreciate that answer. That's interesting. All right. Let's end with a couple of questions from some listeners. Ben Axelrod wanted me to ask you, do you ever catch heat, in quotes, from using wrestling lingo? Some people think it should only be used by people in the business.
I don't use wrestling lingo to wrestling people. Now, I do with Bruce because that's what our listeners want to hear. But I'm not, when I'm hanging out with Rick in the back, I'm not going to approach a Dolph Ziggler and say, man, sorry you had to do the job tonight.
Right.
I mean, come on. That's not my place. I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to do that. But, our listener base, that's the way they talk. And we want to be authentic to the listener. So I don't feel like the show is necessarily for the boys. The show is for the fans. And I'm going to talk and speak and behave exactly as they would if they were hosting the show. But of course, at the actual shows themselves, no, I'm out of sight, out of mind, and hey, how are you? Nice to see you. Handshakes, and we're out of here.
Another one here about, are there any particular topics that are for you are sort of the ultimate dream topics that you really, really want to get to with Bruce? I've heard you on the show talk about, even for somebody like, you could do Hogan 87, Hogan 88, Hogan 89. You really will never run out of shows if you want to. But is there one that you haven't done yet that you are just going to be beyond excited for?
We just did it. WrestleMania 6 was one of my top ones. I really enjoyed that. I also want to talk about, and this is something that I guess people just don't really consider, but I want to talk about China. And a lot of people want to know, well, I didn't like China. Why would you want to talk about China? Well, China had so much interesting stuff happened in her career, you know, from being recruited and being basically campaigned to be a part of the company by Triple H and Shawn Michaels, and then her relationship with Triple H, and then Jeff Jarrett walking out and being told, you know, he had making a payoff demand of Vince McMahon to drop the belt to China. And then, of course, the way her career ended and that relationship that is now the authority that we see on TV every day, and it's kind of been swept under the rug. And then China had some crazy stuff she did after wrestling. So topics like that fascinate me. And Bruce's 2008 firing. I know the real story, what's happened there. He's only told, as far as I know, myself and JBL, the real word for word, everything that was said story. And if that makes air, that will be huge. Everyone will talk about it for a long, long time. So the stuff like that, that the dirt, so to speak, is the stuff I really look forward to covering.
Well, you think Bruce will go there? Well, that's a very personal topic, obviously, for him.
No, absolutely. We've already talked about it. He said we were live the tape, and he said if we got 2,000 iTunes reviews, I could pick whatever we wanted to talk about, and he would cover it. So I threw that at him, and he said yes, but he was flipping me the double bird as he did it on Skype. So if we actually get there, which I think we might this weekend,
wow,
then within the next few weeks, we could hear the real story behind his 2008 firing. And there are lots of rumors out there. So what's real, what happened, what didn't happen. And, man, it's a John Grisham novel. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. You probably have seen this, but I believe in terms of talking about China, I think it was Vice. Someone just did a... and if I might have it, GQ, it was a GQ or Vice type. They just did a 7,000 word piece on China's last year. So if you haven't seen that, I would check that long form out where they talk to
absolutely,
yeah, all the people who were sort of with China in her last year, and she connected with a guy who was sort of a marketer and was sort of trying to, if I remember right, to do a documentary. Like he had hired a legitimate documentarian to follow her around the last year of her life because they were sort of trying to bring her to a bit of a comeback. So it's kind of both an interesting and sad story. Somebody wanted to know how big the Con Radisson is.
Oh my gosh! So there's a running gag that started on Ric Flair's podcast about my house here in Huntsville, and
right,
there's lots of rumor and innuendo that it's the Playboy Mansion and it's this grand home. It's just a modest home on a meager hill. It's overhyped.
All right. Well, thank God it's a home. It wasn't something else. We would get the explicit tag on here if that happened. Is there anybody who currently, even though you're not going to do this for your show, is there a particular performer who's working right now that you would love to interview just because you find them particularly fascinating?
You mean in terms of someone who's on air?
Yeah, someone who's on air. Well, so someone who's an in-ring performer right now.
I mean, I think the only answer here is John Cena. I think John Cena is one of the most misunderstood personalities. And his whole wrestling career of the last 5 years or so is just, I don't know. It's unlike anything we've ever seen where you have a guy who is clearly the most over guy in the promotion. It's not debatable.
Right.
Moves the most merchandise, you know, sells the most tickets, moves the needle. But it's almost in fashion to boo him at the beginning of the match. But oftentimes by the end of the match, the same people who were booing their lungs out are now standing and applauding because he put forth a hell of a match. And anytime he wants to, he can crank out a world-class promo for you. And the idea that, you know, that guy exists in 2017, and he's had the long run that he's had, you know, not a few years here or there. And Stone Cold Steve Austin is one of my favorite wrestlers ever. But when you really look at it, I mean, he's got 4 years on top. Cena's been on top for more than 10 years now. And it's a dozen years now.
Yeah.
And that's a run that will never be paralleled again. I don't think anybody's done as much, as long, as hard as he. And how has he managed to navigate through all those political climate changes and the actual economic recession, the pay-per-view era, the network era? Oh, by the way, set all kinds of charity records. I don't know that there is a more intriguing and interesting person maybe in the history of the WWF than John Cena.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you didn't even get to the fact that a crossover star in entertainment, both hosting the SB Saturday Night Live and getting great reviews for his movie work. You know, Hogan crossed over as well, but he didn't cross over with praise in film and praise for comedic hosting and stuff like that. So I think you are correct on Cena. I don't think there's anybody in the history of wrestling who's like him and has had that, just that kind of, I mean, maybe The Rock, but even The Rock sort of is a different character than Dwayne is different
than
John.
In a much different number of years. I mean,
exactly.
The time is different. The circumstances
right.
are different. You know, when The Rock was running hard, he was on top of Austin. Okay, who was Cena on top with?
Many different people. I mean, it's like an assembly line of different types. You know, one year it's Seth Rollins, and the next year it's Ambrose, and the next year it can be anybody else.
But there's no Austin.
And, right,
and
there's
that's
no
the
Austin.
The point is, you know, if we were talking about traditional sports and we talk about, you know, oh, well, if Dan Marino would have had a better wide receiving core, oh, if Dan Marino would have had a defense, oh, if Dan Marino – well, John Cena is like the Dan Marino, except he's winning rings every year.
Right.
No disrespect to Dan Marino. Just saying, in football, there's always the exception of, well, if he just had this, well, if he just had this. Well, Austin had Rock. Rock had Austin. Hogan had Macho. Who did Cena have?
That's good. Yeah. Yeah. You know what? That's interesting. He doesn't have a contemporary in that, you know, way in traditional sports, like, you know, Russell had Chamberlain, et cetera. Gretzky had Lemieux. There is no guy. So that's an interesting way to look at that. All right, two more, Conrad, and I'll let you get out of here. I know you have a real business to run. How do you feel about the return of Goldberg in relation to the larger when the WWE brings these guys back to be active? You know, we saw Sting a couple of years ago. In the same way, we have Goldberg now. Obviously, looks great. Certainly doesn't look his age. But there's always it seems like there's always a storyline, either every year or every other year, where somebody from the past returns in an active role, and it feeds into nostalgia. So somebody like me, who's not 30, likes it. But I always wonder if it's, you know, you're 35, so you're a little younger than me. So I wonder if how good that is for the. For the game, so to speak.
Well, I mean, I know there's a lot of folks who think it's bad for business and they should be featuring the current full-time roster, et cetera, et cetera. But in the end, if it makes money, more money for the company, it is better for everyone.
Right.
Sometimes you can't see that, but people who don't see that are being selfish and they're just being caught up in themselves. If the company does better, then its employees will do better. And that's just the way the business works. I mean, if they tried a guy on top and he flopped and it had a detrimental effect on business, a major detrimental effect, there will be layoffs. Vince McMahon's not going anywhere. He'll cut people, but he's not going anywhere. So that guy maybe loses his opportunity and he won't get another shot. But along the way, what was the collateral damage? You know, what opportunities were lost? What revenue was lost? What jobs were lost? What income was not created? If you feel like you have, you know, a silver bullet, so to speak, why wouldn't he use it? And this one with Goldberg seemingly has a bit of an expiration date because he's 50.
Yeah.
So if you're not going to do it now, when are you going to do it? 10 years from now? You can't do it at 60. So it's kind of a now or never situation. And I think they've done a phenomenal job of booking him in a way where, you know, he's somewhere protected. He's not been exposed as someone who, you know, hasn't wrestled in a dozen years and is 50 years old. He hasn't been presented that way, so he's come off as a superstar. And in the end, the WWF will be better for it, both in storyline, but more importantly, in real life, the revenue piece.
Yeah, he owes Lesnar a bottle of wine, if nothing else, because he helped put him over twice. But this, I think it's worked. For whatever reason, I'm buying Goldberg. I think it has a shelf, like as you said, but I think it's there. Do you think, if you had to guess, do you think Hogan will ever return in some form, either at a WrestleMania or at a large show where he makes his return after the banning?
I think he'll be at this year's WrestleMania.
You do? Wow, why do you say that? That's interesting.
It's time. If he's not at this year's WrestleMania, I would bet everything I own or ever will own, he'll be at next year's WrestleMania. It's time. This is his home. He deserves a second shot. And it's not going to be very popular for me to say that, but this is America. We're the land of second chances. And I feel like he has done his good far outweighs his bad, and his home is with the WWF, and I feel like he'll be back.
Yeah,
if not this WrestleMania, next year.
I think within 2 years, too. I don't know if it'll be this year, but I think that's an interesting – I think that's a correct prediction. All right, finally, here's the last one from Chris Press. I like this question, actually. And he was asking, basically, do you feel like you're ever being worked by Bruce Pritchard?
Oh, for sure. Listen, anybody who listens to the show knows when he's working. And, you know, when he denies tooth and nail that Akeem the African Dream isn't a rib, we all know that's BS. But he's playing a character of sorts. You know, yes, he's trying to be truthful, but at the same time, he's trying to be an antagonist for me and you, the listener. And that's why we love him so much. So, absolutely. If you're not working a little bit, you're not really in the wrestling business.
How does your family feel about this enterprise that you're – Is it exciting for them to walk down the street with a famous podcaster now, Conrad?
Well, not a lot of people in Huntsville know me as that. They know me as the mortgage guy. But, mom kind of thought it was kind of dumb. And then when someone told her that I had a live show and that it was sold out, she had no idea what that meant and asked. So when she actually took an interest and I showed it to her, now she thinks it's the coolest thing ever. So it took a little while, but now that she gets it, she's all in.
All right, I like that. All right, the guest has been Conrad Thompson, who is the host, I guess you probably can call him the founder too, of Something to Wrestle With. That is the podcast with Bruce Pritchard, where they go back on a singular topic in professional wrestling and just basically examine everything about that singular time, whether it was like the last Nitro show or one of the WrestleManias or a particular Royal Rumble a certain year. It's just like it's fascinating to hear this. And obviously, as we pointed out on the broadcast, the reason is because Bruce Pritchard was a Vince McMahon right-hand guy, and he was there through everything, through the contracts, through the booking, through the promos, and it's just fascinating listening. I would even think it might be fascinating, even if you're a very casual wrestling fan at the least. And then What Happened When is their latest show, and that is with Tony Schiavone, who from the earliest of Starrcades to the end of wrestling under the Turner framework was the voice of all those promotions, from Jim Crockett Promotions and World Championship Wrestling Promotions. If you were a fan of the NWO, as I was, you know, there's nobody better than Tony Schiavone, you know, basically saying, "You go to hell, Hulk Hogan," when all of hell broke loose between the NWO, I should say, and WCW folks. So listen to that podcast as well, What Happened When. That's with Conrad and Tony Schiavone. And these are gigantic podcasts. So just see where I am on the chart and look way, way up, and that is where you'll see Conrad. That's my promo, Betsy. Listen, Conrad, I am like such a closet. I'm not a closet, I should say. I am such like a fanboy of your podcast. I really, really, I think they're fantastic. I'm not going to lie. I've told my people at Sports Illustrated we should take the concept that you do and use it somehow in sports because I think it's brilliant, and I think it totally would play to what we do because we have a lot of history at our magazine, and we could absolutely do the same thing if we could find a Bruce Pritchard type in that sport. So, one, I appreciate you being on the podcast, but two, and I'm not bullshitting you here, you have just hit on something content-wise that is really interesting, and I look forward to these, and I hope you keep it up, and I appreciate you doing them. So, thank you for doing your podcast, and thank you for appearing on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Hey, man, I appreciate all the love, and thank you for the opportunity to come on and talk about the shows, and continued support for your show as well.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to Conrad Thompson for coming on. Like I said, I could talk to that guy all day. I find that podcast really fascinating. Bring in my producer, Lou Pellegrino. Lou, I honestly have no idea whether you are a wrestling fan or not, and I have no idea whether you've listened to this podcast or not, although I do know that people in digital media are well aware of the top podcasts, so they're well aware of these guys. One, the numbers for that are insane. I mean, think of just how many people are listening. That is an incredible business this guy started. But more than that, he really figured out something that I had not heard in this form. Maybe there are serial types that are doing it. I'm just talking sports or sports entertainment. To take something historical and to go that deep on it for 2 hours was an unbelievable genius premise. I have heard people sort of like do documentary style, but I had never heard a podcast where you took a singular person who was in the inner circle, like this Bruce Pritchard guy, and just talk about what happened. And that is why the podcast is, it's an unbelievable hit.
Well, it's right up my alley because I'm all about nostalgia. I get lost in the rabbit hole of YouTube every
right.
now
You're
and then.
You're always checking Howard Stern tapes out from like 1993.
Well, we could go into that on another episode of this podcast because there are some things you miss about certain things, you know, especially how shows change over the years. But one of the things that I really love is nostalgia, and it could be anything from watching Ricky Steamboat fight Macho Man Randy Savage in WrestleMania 3.
Right.
And watch
one of the great fights of all time.
Right, and yeah. watch George the Animal Steel save Ricky
Steamboat. Passed away as we taped this
who
today.
Passed away right. as we taped this podcast, and that wasn't even me trying to shoehorn a reference right, right. in. But there's so many great things, and one thing that I love is when you're able to look back. And one thing Conrad said is you look at a guy like Paul Heyman, he's focused, forward. He doesn't like nostalgia, doesn't right. look back, you know. And I think there are people like me who crave the backstories of the Hogan versus Orndorff feud,
right.
why this happened,
right.
you know, who decided that Andre and Hogan should fight each other. This should be Andre's shot at the title. He's never going to win it again. You know, I mean, eventually I think he did win it for a little bit, but that just goes to right. show you how disconnected
good heel,
I was.
Good promo heel turn though by Andre with Bobby Heenan when he finally turned on Hulk,
right. Well,
which is great.
Well, the funny thing is I was at the Garden that night. Hogan fights Kamala. Hogan beats Kamala. He comes out with the face paint on.
Right.
And it was one of the first times I remember seeing Hogan cheat. He actually reached into his tights, threw some dust into Kamala's
heel.
Face. But then Andre comes out. Hogan's doing the pose down. Andre looks at the belt. He looks at Hogan. Looks at the belt. Looks at Hogan and just flings it at Hogan and leaves. And
that was the start of everything. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And to be there live, it was amazing. But yeah, that sounds like a podcast that's right up my alley. And I'm going to actually go check it out.
It's really good. I mean, both of them are excellent. The Pritchard one is unbelievable, and
the story writing in wrestling is fantastic. I haven't kept up, obviously, because
these guys are geniuses. The people who write this stuff are amazing, and not for nothing, our current president Donald Trump has a long history in the WWE. And if you want to see parallels between a lot of the things, this is no bullshit here. If you want to see parallels between a lot of things that Trump does, particularly how he interacts with the press, watch the WWE, and you will see. Your mind will explode just to see sort of the parallels and a lot of the things that he does. But that's a podcast for another day. My thanks to Lou Pellegrino. This is an extra bonus podcast this week in addition to Ramona Shelburne. So thanks to him for coming in. And the numbers for this podcast are not the Bruce Pritchard, Conrad Thompson.
I think he liked that
Tony Schiavone podcast.
I thought he thought that was funny. Yeah. When you look where I am and then look up.
But the numbers for this have been fantastic. I mean, the Ryan Russillo one, we hit the top 20. Which was pretty awesome to see against the big boys like Fox and ESPN, et cetera. So that's always cool. So thank you very much for listening. The previous one, you can jump in here. Look,
I was just going to say, like I told you, just reviews. If you listen on iTunes, reviews and ratings, that elevates
you.
the visibility of the podcast.
Please do. Thank you for reminding me, Lou.
We need a word for today. I know it's not a very long one, but we've been doing so well with the code.
We might
words.
Do that. Hold on. I'll cite Jemele Hill and Michael Smith. Ramona Shelburne, Ryan Russillo, Ramona Shelburne. I said Ramona Shelburne. I'm losing my mind today. So those and the Jimmy Trina, John O'Ran podcast, which did phenomenal numbers. Stunning that those two knuckleheads actually are drawing people, but apparently they are. So thank you very much. The podcast for this, the numbers for my podcast, our podcast are up way up. So thank you, and I appreciate that. All right, if you have actually or if you're still listening. God help you. You know, we're in 75 minutes in. Lou, what's going to suck here is you're going to give a word, and unlike the other podcast where we had hundreds of people contact us, there's going to be three people who contact us.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. All right, so you got to make it a wrestling word, obviously.
Of course it's going to be a wrestling word.
All right, so if you listen to this, contact Lou Pellegrino and I on Twitter with this word.
Ham and Egger.
Ham and H-A-M-A-N-D-E-G-G-E-R.
It could be and, so H-A-M-N-E-G-G-E-R or ham, H-A-M-A-N-D-E-G-G-E-R. We're going to give a little love to Bobby the Brain Heenan who started that term.
Ham and Egger. I like that.
All right.
I'm predicting no one's going to listen. All right. for Lou Pellegrino, for the guys at Digital Media, and for everybody at Sports Illustrated, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.